Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, Anna.
Hey, Shereen.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous, and we're here with another fun, amazing guest.
Yes, we are. We're joined by producer of podcasts, writer of television scripts, funny person on the internet, Cody Ziegler, a.k.a. Zig.
Zig. Don't call him Cody. He will come after you. Take it from me.
His Gundams will come for you. Yeah.
It's such a good conversation. He's with us right now. Say hi.
Hello. Gang.
We talk about his work, his upbringing, his amazing parents. I really love this conversation. I know you will too. Don't go anywhere.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Anna.
Hey, Shereen.
Hi, Anna.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good. Welcome to a new episode of Ethnically Ambiguous, remote recording quarantine edition.
Remote recording quarantine edition. We are here with a guest, as usual, and today it's a guest that I've been trying to get on the show for a while. Full disclosure, I was contacting him with an email that wasn't functioning anymore for like a month and a half. So that was my bad. But it's finally happening. We're here with Zig, aka Cody Ziegler, but don't call him Cody. His name is Zig.
Yeah.
Hi. Thank
you. I was just so swamped. I had to have my assistants fight you off with a fake email address. But you got through them.
That's
so
classic move.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
How are we living? How are we doing in the quarantine?
Oh, you know. This is it.
Actually, I will say, I'm pretty proud of myself today. I did my laundry.
Oh, hell
and
yeah.
And I finally have clean sheets. I don't want to admit how long it's been since I washed my sheets, but it's been a minute because I don't have it in unit washer dryer. And I was like a little paranoid about using the communal ones, but it was time. And I'm proud of myself.
I have not done laundry since this stuff popped off, so I'm actually going to go do laundry today. So in that way, we are kindred spirits.
Fuck yeah. Yes.
Thanks for the support, man.
It feels good.
Yeah.
It feels good.
I can't wait to smell good from like laundry detergent. It's going to change the whole game.
It's really will. It really will. But yeah, should we just like get right into it? I feel like I forget how to have conversations when I do the podcast now. I don't know how conversations work.
This is the most human contact I've had in like 42 days.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Okay. Man. I'm honored. I'm very honored.
Okay, let's go back. Where were you born?
I was born in, I'm from a really, really small rural town called Pine Hall, North Carolina. I have to overpronounce it like that because otherwise my accent would make it sound insane. But I grew up in a town called Pine Hall. I was like one of like maybe six black kids that went to my elementary school. So that was fun. Yeah, it was real rad. No problems there. Everything was smooth sailing. But yeah, I grew up there. And like all my family is basically from there. Like the long story short is like there's like three or four different like clans. And they are basically all from the same like owned by the same slave owner. And like once they like slavery ended, they also like parted into like different parts of the county. So I'm from the biggest one called the Harrison clan, which is like that was the main like the main slave owners were the Harrisons. They had like 10,000 slaves or something crazy like that spread across like three or four different slates. Whoa. Yeah, it's insane. There's this book called The Harrisons that's really interesting. If anyone's interested in like just seeing like how like just even one family can like impact like millions of people just by being versed in slavery. But yeah, so I'm from there, and like, wow, like I said, very small rural town. Like my dad, damn, when he was a kid, he was like,
that's intense.
Yeah, it could be intense, but it is interesting seeing like how diverse how diverse blackness can be. Like that's the thing that I really saw growing up, is that like my mom's super light skin, like, but my dad, like, but like she has brothers that are super dark skin. So like growing up immediately you sort of saw that black was definitely not a monolith, which was helpful for me. My dad is, when he was like a kid, he was like a sharecropper, so like we got the full extent of like the punishing black experience when I was growing up. But after like when I went to college, I just like, hey, you know what, I need to get out of the South. I don't think I can handle this much more. And that's how I found my way to California.
Wow. So you can, you can trace your bloodlines black.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Back.
That was, yeah. Yeah, my dad, he's done, he's built like a family tree, and it goes back like 300 or 400 years, I think. And like the Harrison books. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, yeah, he's done the research, and the Harrison book, that one goes back to like where they were at in like Scotland and shit. So like, I'm lucky, one of the more luckier ones, in that I do have like a little bit of information as far as like where like my ancestors came from. But even still, mm-hmm. like there are definitely people that are like, I don't know, they just said good book with good big black book with good teeth in 1820. So like, that's all the info you got. So it's weird diving into that stuff. Yeah.
So do you know where your family originated from?
No, I only know like the white, like the slave owner half is from Scotland. They're the Harstons from Scotland, and like they got here. And then they mixed with, I'm assuming just blacks from the West Coast, like Africans from the West Coast, and then also with the indigenous Sara natives. So like, that's the best info I got. I would like to find more, but surprisingly, there's not even a lot of information. Yeah. At least from what I found from like even the native parts of my family, which I would love to like just get some info on that and see like if there's like, I don't know, councils or there's like a tribe going on or something, where you can like get, mm-hmm. just get more information about like parts of my history. Would be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that would be really cool. I mean, good for your dad for doing so much research and compiling all that stuff. I think it's amazing. I've always been so envious of people that can like retrace their bloodline, because Middle Eastern people don't do that. Like, there is no record of like anything really. That's why I was really interested. I think me and Anna both were really fascinated by like 23andMe or like those ancestry tests when they first came out, because I really just wanted to know. Yeah, I've done 23andMe. Mm-hmm. I convinced my mom to do it too. My dad won't do it because he's convinced the government will use his DNA to like frame him for a crime.
Yeah, what kind of results are you guys getting?
But, Anna's results are wild, but I was actually pretty intrigued by mine because I was mostly Syrian, which I knew. Well, not Syrian, because like Syria is like a country that like was developed later, but it was mostly from that region. A little bit of Turkish. There was like some percentages that were like, there was one percentage that said unknown, and then like North Africa, and then parts of like Southern Europe, and they called them, in the 23andMe test, they called them like the gypsies, which is like a slur that some people get offended by. So poo on you, 23andMe. Yeah. But but yeah, and then there was like 0.1% Italian, 0.1% like I think it was like 0.1 Japanese even. So like I had a huge mix of stuff that like really was crazy to me. But I'm so interested in the one that's unknown. And then when you get your mom or your dad to do it, you can retrace like what half of you came from them. And my mom's side, for example, came from like Turkey, and then her mom came from Northern Africa, which we already kind of knew just based on like stories. And then my grandfather on my mom's side would come from like Europe, Turkey area. But we ultimately, I'm ultimately like, my parents are both Syrian, so I'm Syrian. But but it is interesting just to know where that traced back from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. Mine was just like 98% Iranian and nothing else.
Well, at least you finally like, got so, a definite answer. Then,
yeah, well, I mean, part of me was like, okay, yeah. Cool. All right, this is useless. Like, and my mom was like, yeah, this is what incest is, bro. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like, no one's fucking with anyone else.
I think we did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. We did an episode about our results like last year, I think. And I want to pull them up again because now that I'm like just remembering random bits. Like, I don't even know the exact percentages. But it is really fascinating to know that you're just like a mix of all of these different parts, you know? But have you ever done one, or have you ever been interested in doing one?
No, I was like, so for like the, I mean, it's probably, sorry guys, I just threw up on the mic. No.
Did you drown?
Yeah, I drowned. No, the thing that always got.
It is 420.
Oh shit, you're right.
It is 420, are you high?
I got to smoke it up after this, then I'm going to blaze it, 420 Blaze It Kings. No, I think a part of me has a little bit of your dad where I'm like, I don't want the government having my DNA information. And then also I'm like, how much can they realistically tell me? It's like, all right, 75% of you is from Africa. I was like, yeah, I gathered that. Like, do you know like what particular parts of Africa they would be from? Like, if I could get like super detailed information like that, I think that would seem like it might be worth it to like, you know, trade off the man having my piece of my spit. But I think,
I will say it is pretty vague. It is pretty vague. I wish it was a little bit more detailed too.
Yeah. I mean, I think I could probably talk my dad into doing it. I feel like he'd be interested in finding out a little bit more information since that's been like his pet project.
I think that's worth it. If you can get a parent to do it with you, then you can like trace their lineage with yours and like combine forces and see like their, because that's when you really get like the tree, because you can like retrace it. And I think that's really fascinating. And then some of them also do like a health thing because if you don't know your family history, like you don't know if you have health problems, you know, and you don't know you have a family history of whatever disease.
Yeah.
So it is really helpful in my opinion. And like there was some of the stuff that I learned confirmed a lot of stuff about me. Like it told me in my DNA that I could be, that I'm probably lactose intolerant, which is like, I knew that, but it was just strange to see it on like DNA test.
How retroactively things become privileged, but just by like, oh yeah, it's crazy. Like there are definitely tons of people in this country and all over the world that just don't know anything about their history genetically or like medically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a privilege.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Being from the Middle East is so, like, it's so, I don't know. You know nothing.
It's a trip.
And then your parents won't tell you shit.
You know nothing.
Your parents like, are like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like everything was passed down through like stories, or a good part of it is like, you know, you had an uncle that did this.
Yeah.
Like, you know, your grandma, she had hair like this. So we probably assume that she's from like this tribe mixed with this. You're like, I'm going to have to take this at face value because there's no way, like, there's no medical records or anything that that legitimize what you're telling me.
Yeah, that's all you got. I mean, that's exactly how we grew up with just, like, bits. Because I've only ever known one grandfather. Mm-hmm. It's my mom's dad. My dad's dad died when my dad was 17, so I never met him.
Yeah.
But my mom's dad would just, like, he's a interesting person, but he would like walk around the house because he lived with us for a while, and then we'd visit them in Syria, and now they're back in the States. They're in West Virginia, but he would like walk around the house when he lived with us just being like, I'm from Turkey. Like he would just say things like, yeah, my family's from Turkey. This is like 5 years ago, the first time he ever brought up that we're from Turkey.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't just drop this. Like I have no idea. Like I guess I'm Turkish now, or like whatever. So like there's this like how I put together pieces of my life just based on like random comments mm-hmm. that he made.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, that's how you gotta do it.
You gotta do it. And he says that he made a family tree himself, and I've been trying to get it for the longest time, but it's in Syria.
Oh no.
And so I've been talking to like my cousins that are still over there, just like trying to secure it, just mm-hmm. making sure it's like just I wish was some type of record of
yeah,
like
that's cool.
something. But I don't know. Maybe it's there, maybe it's not.
You gotta get your little mitts on that. That'd be great.
Yeah. Your little mitts. Yeah. That's cute.
Thank you.
Little mitts. Okay, well let's go back to you.
Yeah, hit me.
So okay. Are both your parents from that region of North Carolina, or did one of them kind of find themselves there?
Yeah, so they're from there's two different counties that are like on the border, Stokes County and Rockingham County. And my mom, she was the Harrison, like she came from the Harrison clan, and my dad came from the Low clan. They're like another pretty big like slave family, but. Yeah, like they're both there. Like they both have, I think they're like quintessential Southerners in the fact that my mom, has never met a stranger. She will cook for anyone. Like she loves talking with random people at the shopping market. I remember as a kid, my biggest, fear would be watching her stop the shopping cart and just talk to someone. And I would just immediately want to evaporate into the sun because I was like, oh, we're gonna mm-hmm. be here for like 15 minutes. She talked with this random lady named Pam. My dad, you're speaking about like stories and stuff, and my dad is definitely the one that's like, he'll just randomly drop stories on me like every couple of years, like, you know, we used to break into this thing and do this, this, and this. He told me this one crazy story like a couple of years ago. So like they grew up, you know, obviously for the rural family. So they grew up very poor. They didn't have like running water or anything like that. So he would tell me how they would like sometimes they have to go like take baths in the creek and stuff. But sometimes they would also like, they would like build their own like baths in the side of like hills and stuff. So mm-hmm. what they would do is like, they would go out and find like a hill near like some running water, and they would like dig out the side of it and like lay down rocks in it and like come back every couple hours and like scoop out like the muddy rocks until it eventually became like clean. And then they'd put like salt into it to kill like any bugs and bacteria, then scoop that out. And like, that's how they would like take showers. And that was like his existence for like the first 13, 14 years of his life. Like just knowing like poverty that I've never, like, I can't personally conceive of, because like we were lower class, but like we were still, we had a trailer and like we had, you know, fans and we had like food and stuff on the table. Like he lived a completely different experience having grown up through like Jim Crow era, like South, which is to me, like, I mean, I like there was racism and stuff going on when I was a kid and still want to go back now, but like not to the level that he and my mom experienced, which to me is like sort of unfathomable, like so that they would have to go through.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's an yeah, you're right. There's an experience that like it's just, that's incredible that they lived through that. But like I again like can't fathom it. Just like the privilege of even having like plumbing, you know.
Yeah,
that's crazy, you know. Just that's wow. And
I mean, once my dad told me that, it all sort of all the dots would have connected like stuff with his personality. Like I remember as a kid, the first time that we got like air conditioning in the house, my dad was like walking around like, yeah, we got AC now, like we're living on high cotton. And like there are small things like that throughout like our history, where like you'd get like you know, you get like, you know, AC, or we'll get like, he would get a car that had like power windows, and he was so stoked that he didn't have to like crank the window to get the stuff down like that. And now it all sort of connect when he told me that story of like growing up with no running water and being super poor. It's like, all right, yeah, these, I understand how these are huge victories for you now, and I'm taking this shit for granted.
Yeah, I mean, what did he do for work, like as you were growing up?
Yeah, it was cool because I got to see the progress of it. Like my earliest memories is that he worked at like a steel, like spinning, you know, like steel wire, like this was just steel wire, but like he worked at a place that would like spin that, and I thought it was super cool because he drove a forklift and I saw that was so rad. But he was also at the same time going to night school, so like I definitely have memories of me being a kid and him coming home super late. and like studying and stuff. And then like, there's like, they're just clips because I was like 4 or 5. So like, they're just moments, like flashes. But I definitely remember the progress of him going from like steel mill, night school, to getting a job doing stuff with computers. And then like, like seeing him like go from like, I'm leaving the house with my work belt and gloves to like, I'm leaving the house in a suit and a tie. And now all my problems are like getting computer stuff to work. And like his, like we had like a room and like, we were like some of the first kids in town to like get like a computer or like even have the internet. And like seeing his interest shift from stuff like, man, this is a cool belt sander, to like, oh man, we're going to get Doom on this computer. I'm going to teach you how to play video games and like use MS-DOS and like, and then it even continued that, like, because when I was about to graduate from my undergrad, he was getting his MBA. So like, it was cool, like us both getting to like walk across the stage at the same time was like a cool, powerful moment for us. And like, he's always been someone who's been very adamant about the power of education and like how, particularly for people that were like marginalized or underprivileged or just didn't have access to that stuff, how you can really use it to weaponize and like change your trajectory on life. If you like, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and like luck out.
Oh yeah. He sounds incredible.
He's a cool dude. I'm biased, but I like the guy. He's a cool guy.
And what did your mom do?
My mom was surprised. She was like, she started off as like a dispatcher for like 911, and then eventually became like a sheriff's deputy. And then worked her way up to being like basically the warden for the county jail. She did that till I was like maybe 14 or 15. And then she was like, I can't take this shit. Like, I can't be a black woman working for law enforcement anymore. I need to find a way less stressful raises job. And now she's been working. She's like been like an accountant. Like, she works in like accounts payable. I've been doing that for like the past 15, 20 years, and like she loves it. Like, she has like very serious, like there's no stress. She doesn't have to like take a call at like 2 a.m. to go arrest some meth head, and like she has normal hours. Like, this is honestly, she's the most relaxed I've ever seen her been in her entire life. So it was like, as soon as she got that job, like she was like hair, long hair, don't care, relaxing. I'm gonna go listen to my Tony Braxton, drink a couple of mojitos. Like, it was one of the best changes you could possibly have.
Damn, good for her. Yeah. That's probably such a nice change.
I know.
Yeah.
Like,
a prison warden. Yeah. And and my only idea of prison wardens is like Oz, where I'm like, oh my God.
We were like, this was like just a little council. So it wasn't super intense. It was like, the people in there were like as nice as you could be. It'd be like, oh, I had a DWI, so I have to like stay the weekend in jail. But like, I think all the stuff that came with that, having to like deal with like racist Southerners and like being in a position of power and like having to deal with all that, she was like, I don't think the checks are worth it at this point in my life. I want to go find something less stressful to do.
Yeah.
And sit at like a nice desk.
Yeah. I mean, both your parents just sound like the hardest workers, and just like, I admire people that just keep going, because that's all they can do, right? I don't know, like, that's just I was gonna bring us to a little break, and then we'll come right back and continue this conversation. So let's just do that really quick. We'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back.
Thanks, Shireen. I actually have a question, and it's going to sound very naive, but you were talking about it earlier, and I'm just curious if you could break this down for me. Now, you say, like, your parents are from these different slave families. Yeah. How does that work? So, like, what makes it a slave family? Like, how is it your genealogy if it's like this family owned all these slaves? Like, was like I don't fully understand that, and I'm sorry say it. I'm just not very knowledgeable on that.
So, yeah. So to break it down, so there is the family that owned everyone that had like 10,000 slaves was called the Harrisons. They had plantations that spanned from like Virginia, North Carolina, a little bit of Tennessee into South Carolina. So like, you know, when you're a slave, you just adopt like your slave master's last name. And they would have, so that was like the Harrisons. That was like the big one. And then they would have smaller like families that would marry into that. So if like John Harrison married into like Julia Goolsbee, like that Goolsbee got morphed into the Harrison clan. So like the clan, the main, like the, so like, if it was like, think of it like a Venn diagram, like there's like Harrisons. Uh-huh. And then inside you'll have like the Goolsbees, or you'll have like the Lowes, either smaller subclans that are all comprised of like just being eaten up by the Harrisons when they were like, you know, expanding their plantations and stuff. So like if you go to my hometown, like you'll walk around and you'll meet someone, and like it's very normal for like older people like my mom's generation to be like, oh, what are you? She's like, oh, I'm Harrisons. What about you? Like, oh, I'm Bailey's. Oh, we're Goolsbees, or like we're Lowes. Like that's sort of like how they connect the dots and see like how, like how related they can be, because honestly, like most black people from my hometown and even a couple of towns over are related in some form or fashion. It may be second, third, fourth cousins, but like the, like, you know, like it's a 7-minute drive from my mom's house to like the plant, the main plantation where like her ancestors were kept on. So like a lot of these people didn't move very far from like when they were freed and stuff. One, because they didn't have money or access, and like you're doing things like sharecropping, so like that's the only way that you can make money. But like there is like a very large community of like people of slave ancestry, and it's just so baked into like the not necessarily DNA, but also just like how people talk with one another down there, that like that's how you get information. That's the first time I ever, like, I think maybe as Americans, like the idea of clans seems like sort of alien, I think, to a lot of them, because it's not a thing that we deal over here, I feel like, with like cultures and stuff. Whereas like my Nigerian friends, like they understand what clans are because they're different clans and stuff. But like that was my first introduction to like what like that sort of society looks like, or that sort of like grouping of people looks like. And it's just become like just a second language whenever you're like walking around my hometown and stuff. Does that clear up anything? Is that?
Yeah, no. The whole like taking of the last name, I think I kind of knew that in the back of my mind from like history, but that's so interesting. So you just, wow, history's fucking wild, man.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's like fascinating to me, because I don't have any sort of like my parents moved here from Iran, so like I have no sense of any of like how that sort of linealogy goes back.
Yeah, that's why
that was really interesting.
That's why, like, if you ever like watch a movie that has like a generic black person last name, it's like Washington or Jackson, because they had the largest amount of slaves.
I see. Wow.
I mean, that makes sense. But I mean, the Harrisons must have been really fucking powerful then. That, you know, they probably controlled a lot of the city.
Yeah, they. From what I haven't read the book in a long time, but I think they were probably like, if not one of the richest slave owning family in the South at that time, because they had like 10,000 slaves stretched across like 3.5 states, which is just an insane amount of money. Yeah.
Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. I mean, that's just,
it's too many slaves. Sorry to break it to you.
I mean, you really 9,000. Realize, but you really realize like slavery wasn't that far away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that far. Like, it's not that long ago. Like, the fact that we could still talk about it, like it was like it's your family history, mm-hmm. literally, like that is, it's not that far away. Yeah. Our history is not that, you know?
Yeah. It's one of those things where, especially when you, grow up around like the remnants of it, and you can like my dad definitely took me to the house that he grew up in as a kid, which is like a really shitty like shot. You guys know what shotgun shacks are?
Mm-mm, no.
They're basically like one or two story houses, but they were so small and shallow that the idea was that like you could go into the front door and shoot a shotgun and it would shoot everything like between like, you know, you and the back door. Yeah.
Oh,
they're very small places, but like he took me to the house that he grew up in with like his brothers and sisters and stuff, and like on the edge of like the property line there are like just gravestones for like slaves, so like his like probably great grandparents and cousins and stuff, and like they weren't like the tombstones weren't like, you know, dilapidated, like you could very easily read it, like, you know, John,
yeah,
like, you know, 1827 or whatever. It's like it wasn't that far removed, and like culturally, like from the South, it definitely isn't that far removed, because there's still a lot of like out and open racism in a way that like it seems almost comical. Like it's not, definitely not funny, but it is kind of funny if you can like remove yourself from it. Like my dad would tell me stories about how when my grandpa would like vote and stuff before like the Voting Rights Act, like they would legitimately, like you'd walk into like the corner store wherever you were voting from, and they would legitimately, depending on how they were feeling, if they wanted to be an asshole, they would make you like guess how many jelly beans were in the jelly jar, like in like a jar and shit. And like they're like, yeah, they would just do that because they mm-hmm. had nothing better to do, and they wanted to fuck with black people.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
Wow. You bring up a good point where, because you were raised in the South versus like me primarily being raised as far as America goes, like in California, mm-hmm. And Anna too, like we are more removed from the idea of slavery mm-hmm. than you would be if you're growing up around like a plantation, like an old plantation mm-hmm. or like whatever. Like when I visited New Orleans for the first time last year, and you see these giant plantations just like out mm-hmm. there, like you realize like that the history is so yeah. recent. So I can only imagine growing up there as a kid and like really having that be present. So let's just go from there. Mm-hmm. How was it like, you mentioned that you were like one of the few black people or in your school. How was that like growing up, and did you have any siblings? Like what was your experience?
In the elementary school, was like maybe five or six other black kids, like in my grade anyway. But like you're a kid, so like you don't really recognize race like that as a kid. Like mm-hmm. it was another thing that was very cognizant of, because I also went to like daycare before that. So like I was just used to being around kids. And like my mom and dad mm-hmm. always made a very good point not to be like, hey, we don't need to introduce you to the concept of racism as a 5-year-old. You should just like experience life as a kid as much as you can. And like when this stuff happens, then we can have that conversation. Like we don't need to necessarily taint your perspective of humanity at such a young age. So like, you know, elementary school was pretty easy. Like middle school was when it like started getting a little bit bad, but even then, like I got off pretty easily. I think like most of it would be like you're riding home on the bus and like some white kids would throw a t-shirt with like the N-word on it, or like they would yell stuff at you when you get off the bus, which is like, it's bad and it's not fun to be around. But like I was also basically this size since I was in middle school, so like people weren't really messing with me like that, fortunately. Mm-hmm. And then in high school, when you're high school, you sort of develop like your cliques and friends and stuff. So you can edit who the people that you are around. Like they're definitely still mm-hmm. Racist and stuff. And like, you know, they would, our mascot was like a Sara Native American. So like you would see like white dudes or just white people in like headdresses and stuff. And like that was like the lowest level of racism. And then like you would have like, you know, your rednecks and stuff who would I have this very distinct memory of like being at a football game in like 9th or 10th grade maybe, and like talking to like one of my classmates' older brother, And he had him being like, yeah, I got brothers and sisters and the Klan all over North Carolina and in the South. I was like, well, this is a weird thing to say to me right now. I'm going to go ahead and leave. And like, that's probably like, that was like a thing that you would have to deal with. Like, it's so ingrained that you're just like, oh, it's not that you're like, I'm being racismed right now. It's like, oh, I am like, it's so thick and pugnant and like hangs over the air and so prominent in every interaction that you have that you're not, for me anyway, from my interactions, I wasn't like super taken aback. It's just like, all right, let me go ahead and check you off as being like what a typical racist Southern white person would be. So like, it wasn't that bad for me. Like, it was just like getting out of it was like the best thing. Like going to college and like meeting other different types of people was like the thing that I enjoyed the most. And like, you were talking about when you went to New Orleans and like seeing plantations and stuff. So like, I got my master's at the Savannah College of Art and Design in Savannah, Georgia, which is a port city. So they have like a very interesting, like they have a very interesting history with like slavery and stuff. But like, I remember reading like some like Savannah tour guide book, but like they had these special types of like iron works that they would have outside of like houses and stuff. Like they're everywhere. If you walk around the city, like you'll see like these iron works, but you would notice every now and then that some would have like special designs. And like, apparently that was like the one, like those designs were designed by like either slaves or they were designed by, they were designed to point out like free houses, like places where you could basically go and hide out if you were like a runaway slave, which was pretty cool. And interesting to like see like how like different regions have their own like different cultures of slavery and racism, which is an interesting thing to sort of choke down.
Whoa.
Yeah. Wow. Do you have any siblings, Zig?
Oh yeah, I have an adopted sister. Shout out Rihanna. I know you're not listening to this because you're like 10 years old, but
your sister's Rihanna?
Yeah. I have a
that's
sister.
That's when you
she's
drop
10.
It. That's when you
I gave her the idea for her first album. I didn't want to say nothing. she's 10. She is probably the most happiest child I've ever met in my life. She does this really prank. She does this prank that she thinks is hilarious, where we share a family account on Netflix, and every week she'll change my profile picture to a random picture and then call me and tell me to go look at it. And then she'll giggle her ass off while I make her change it back. So that's our dynamic.
I love that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I guess you grew up like an only child.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I was definitely an only child, like latchkey kid, come home. Like, you know, watch TV, like when my parents get home at like 5 or 6, like that was my existence basically from like probably like middle school up until like the time I left for college.
So what led your parents to adopt her later in your life?
Well, I think my parents got divorced when I was like 13 or so. Mm. And my dad remarried. And I think my stepmom really wanted a kid. And they were like, well, what's the best way to like have a child, but then also like, you know, because they're like, you know, there are tons of kids in like foster homes and like all that stuff. So like she was actually from California, and like they fostered her for like 3 or 4 years. And like, there's so much work you got to go through. You got to literally childproof your house. And like, you got to do like these random check-ins, and you got to like do all this and like get to pay all this money. It's such a hurdle to like, it's so crazy. Like, there are so many people, like kids that are like looking for loving homes, and they set up so many hurdles for like, to get those kids out of those situations into like loving homes. It's such a, that was a crazy thing that I sort of realized that like, I personally had interviews where like, they would call me and be like, what do you got to say about your dad? Like, what am I going to say? He's a terrible person. Like, well, of course I'm going to say that he's great. But they adopted her like officially like 4 years ago. Aww. They adopted her, and she's been part of the Zigglers ever since.
That's beautiful.
That's nice.
I love that.
Yeah. I think she's going to luck out because they sort of live, they live in one like a city, so like there's like just diversity and there's like just people around. So I'm sure she won't have to deal with like all the sort of pungent racism I had to deal with when I was growing up. At least that's the hope.
That is the hope.
Yeah.
Every generation, I hope it gets less and less racist.
Yeah.
I really hope
it gets
hope
a little
so.
Bit better.
So I'm curious, when did you really realize in your life that you were into the arts, that you wanted, I mean, okay, I guess whenever it was, so you, when me and you met, you were a podcast producer for UCB. Mm-hmm. You came and worked with us at, when it was How Stuff Works for a while, and then you got a job at Earwolf, and you were doing Earwolf, and now you're a comedy, or well, not a comedy, right? You did write on a comedy, didn't you?
Yeah, I wrote for Craig of the Creek, and then yes. I wrote for She-Hulk.
Yeah, so you're a television writer, if you will. Mm-hmm. If you will. Will you, please?
I will.
So what kind of interests you in any, like, art form at all? Like, what brought, like, what at what age were you like,
Dude, it's such a, that's, I'm so glad you brought that up, because honestly, it tracks back to my dad. He was also, like, really into, like, art, more like illustration and stuff. Like, I remember distinctively as, like, a kid, like, 5 or 6, finding, like, Frazetta. He was, like, this guy that made a lot of these really popular, like, sci-fi and pulp comic or book covers and stuff. And my dad had a book of that. I would just, like, flip through it as a kid. And then, like, I would also, like, just look through, like, my dad's sketchbook, because he would, like, you know, recreate those and stuff. He was also a photographer. So, like, since, like, I was a kid, I was always around some sort of creative endeavor. And the first creative thing that I actually did was, like, my dad bought me a guitar for Christmas 1 year. And, like, that was, like, oh, like, well, this is it. I'm going to be a little creative artsy boy.
Yeah.
Only I'm not going to be sad. Like, that was the only thing that set me apart. But yeah, they were always super, like, supportive of, like, me doing art stuff, and even, like, weird art stuff. Being like, I remember as a kid being like, when I discovered Adult Swim, like, I want to do this for a living. And my parents being like, okay, sure, yeah, well, as long as you go to school, let's see what you can do. Like, they were a big driving force in me going to art school, like going to film school, like as a graduate. Like, my parents were like, well, like, we'll support you in the best that we can. Like, we're not rich or made of money, but, like, we'll emotionally support you as you go do this thing. And, like, we'll and if you need to, like, come live in our house and crash for, you know, a couple of months after you graduate because you can't find a job, then we'll let you do that. But, like, lucky, like, I sort of lucked out and got jobs after that. But, like, they've always been super supportive, and they've always been my biggest fans. And, like, even when I was, like, interning at, like, Adult Swim, like, my mom, I remember a call with my mom. She was like, I watched that show with the talking fry. I was like, what are you talking about? She's like, there's that show with the milkshake guys, like, Aqua Teen Hunger Force. She's like, yeah, I watched it, and I saw your name. And she sent me, like, a picture of, like, you know, production assistant or whatever, Cody Ziegler. And I was like, oh, that's great. That makes the stress seem worthwhile. And it definitely, they're like, I think I lucked out in that there are, you know, definitely a lot of, like, Black kids who weren't given that sort of, like, encouragement and freedom because their parents, you know, didn't have the resources to, like, you know, financially or, like, even emotionally, like, they didn't have the resources to, like, support them the ways that they could. So, like, I'm going to shout out my parents to the day that I die. Like, they've definitely helped me and do everything I ever wanted to do. They've helped me out.
Oh, I love that so much. I love that. You could just tell by the way you talk about them that they're, like, just, like, a king and a queen. Like, I just love them so much. Like, they...
I think that coupled with, like, quarantine is, like, the best time to get me to be reminiscent about my parents. You got me at a good time.
Yeah. Good. Wait, so you mentioned that you studied graphic design or what did you study in college?
Oh, in undergrad, I did, like, radio and TV production, which is paying off because I'm recording some stuff right now.
But
grad school was film and television production, mainly.
Oh, I was way off. Why did I think it was graphic design?
It's okay. I'm not going to judge you. This is a safe space. We're all learning. We're all exchanging here. grad school, I studied... like, writing and directing was, like, the main focus in film production. Wow. Yeah.
That's awesome. Wait, what? So you went to undergrad in Savannah?
I went to undergrad in North Carolina and then grad school in Savannah, yeah.
And then how did you make your way to the West Coast?
Oh, boy. Oh, it was so... So, one of my roommates moved... He was the first one to, like, move to L.A. And he was like, all right, I have one contact here. So, like... After I graduated, I was like, all right, I'm going to move to LA too, because, like, it's the only place that I can do the thing that I want to do. And, like, on my drive out here, I got a job working for this really, really shitty YouTube company. Like, they did, like, instructional videos and, like, SAT prep videos. So, like, it was trash. It was the worst job that I could ever possibly have. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give myself 6 months of this. And if I don't have a cool job at the end of 6 months, I'm just going to move to Atlanta and, like, I guess work on rap videos. I have no idea. But, like, 3 months in, I got a job at UCB, and, like, everything changed after that because, one, I basically had no boss, so I could do whatever I want to. Like, I would hang out, talk to Matt Walsh for like a little bit, bust chops, do some jokes, and then being like, hey, I guess I'm going to go play with this film with this camera over here and like shoot sketches on the weekends. And I basically just made a bunch of like videos and shorts and stuff over the weekends and then somehow convinced them to let me be a podcast producer because I took an audio class, one audio course in undergrad. And they were like, all right, cool. You know how to use Audition. We'll let you do that.
Nice.
And then, yeah, and then I sort of fell into like podcast producing and stuff. And that's how I got into like working with you guys and like working with Earwolf and stuff like that. And since I already had like a body of like, you know, like videos and like shorts and sketches and stuff, I decided to like start writing. And through podcasting, I got a writing job. It was crazy. It all formed together. Like that's how I got She-Hulk, was that someone like the showrunner heard me on Yo, Is This Racist when I had to fill in one time. And they're like, hey, they're funny. Can you send me a script? And then I sent the script and I somehow convinced them that I was funny. I don't know how, but it worked.
And it's Jessica Gao, right? She's a showrunner.
Yeah, she's so fucking cool. She's like so late. Yeah, I'm a big stan. I stan Jessica Gao.
She's great.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, honestly, like that's like a, you know, you never know where you're gonna get your job that you want, but that's just like your trajectory is just like a testament to like just doing what you gotta do and then just like saying yes and then sometimes it works out, and that's amazing. Like, honestly, if I can get a writing job from podcasting, that's like the dream. So you did
yeah, right? They would have thought that going into Earwolf to yell at people and be like, there aren't enough black and brown people here would somehow work out into getting a writing job.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm still doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Not at Earwolf.
Should we take one more break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, let's take one more break, and we'll be right back with Zig.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
And we're back.
Oh my God.
We just come right back in.
Uh-oh, y'all. So, my dispensary just texted me happy 420.
Hell yeah. Blaze it.
I don't know why that's interesting at
all.
We're
recording this on 420, by the way. You guys are listening to this after, but we're all so stoned.
Now you know.
We're all super stoned. I'm going to go get some stuff delivered probably after this because I got nothing else to do today.
You got it.
Yeah.
I know.
You got it.
Isn't this quarantine just delightful? I've actually never been busier because of all the remote recordings we have to do. And now it's just like I'm teaching people to use equipment. And it's like I have such little patience for my own equipment that it's like, why am I in charge? You know?
Yeah. I've spent a majority of the quarantine sitting on a really shitty chair on my apartment's balcony walkway, mm-hmm. and then drinking either water or wine. Like, that's what I've been doing. And like waving to the neighbors.
That's your perch.
Yeah, that's my perch when I need to free myself and think.
Nice.
I mean, honestly, I feel like we've all kind of found a new version of ourselves in this.
Yeah.
And that version of you, I mean, it sounds great. It sounds fucking chill. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I sit at my kitchen table and look out the window and watch like the UPS and FedEx truck come and go.
I feel like this has made everyone so wistful.
Yeah. I'm very rear window in here.
Yeah.
I just like watch the weirdos. I watch the people who aren't social distancing from my window, being really judgmental.
No. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like this time we're like really seeing people kind of peeled back. Like
mm-hmm.
we're kind of simultaneously devolving and also exposing ourselves for like, I don't know. It's this really strange time and people are being strange and you just have to keep going.
I've never been this communicative in my life where I'm like, yeah, I totally want to FaceTime with my friend right now at 2 a.m.
I know.
And just talk about like what they're watching on Netflix. Or like, I want to do a Zoom with 8 other people and play like that Jackbox game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Never in my life have I ever wanted to do that until now. And like, or even like Animal Crossing, like, yeah, I definitely want to go to like, I want to go to PFT's island and like, give him some grapes for some cherries. Like, that's what I want to do. But like, that's life now. And like, it is oddly soothing.
Yeah. I've never enjoyed anyone ever FaceTiming me. Like, if anyone would ever FaceTime me without a warning, I would be like, whoa, what the fuck? Ignore, you know, like I would not answer. But now I'm like, oh my God, were you like thinking about me? Oh my god. And then I'm like,
are we into the next stage of our friendship? Oh my god.
I'm like kind of in the middle still. Like, I think it's still alarming and it should be a little bit of a crime to FaceTime out of nowhere. Like, I'm still not.
I want to text me like, hey, do you want to FaceTime? Only because since I've been in quarantine, I only wear gym shorts now and no shirts. Like, I need time to like put a shirt on and like look presentable. Other than that, like, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But don't you just want to be, like, full trash? Like, I just want to be full. Like, if you call me, you going to get me. How you going to get me?
You're going to get the real me, yeah.
Like, if I have boogers in my nose,
I've answered most of the time. I've answered most of the time, but literally 2 days ago, I was on my couch crying. A friend FaceTimed me, and I looked at it for a long time, like, do I answer right now or do I not? And I ended up answering, and I just like admitted, like, hey, yeah, I'm just crying on my couch. Do you still want to talk? And they're like, yeah, let's just talk. Yeah. So
I mean, can't imagine they'd be like, no, bitch, bye.
No, yeah.
You're crying.
I'm only here for happy people.
A click, this bitch was crying.
But I do still think a surprising FaceTime is still should be a crime. I'm not into it yet.
Yeah, I mean, just give me a heads up or ask me, hey, do you want to FaceTime?
Give me a heads up. I'm not as communicative as everyone else seems to be. Like, I have my days where I'm like very willing to reciprocate, but it's hard for me to like reach out. I don't know.
Well, we can work on this together. And
we
also
can work on this together. I mean,
work
I don't
on this
know.
Together. Also,
I don't know if this was recorded.
Follow your bliss. If you don't want to talk to randos, don't talk to randos.
Yeah, you don't talk to anyone if you don't want to.
I don't know if this was recorded. Ziga's going to go do his laundry later, and I just did mine today. I literally did 3 loads.
Oh, hell yeah.
If you guys have an in-unit washer dryer, y'all are blessed. Y'all are lucky. But I finally washed my sheets. I am so proud of myself. I'm going to take a shower after this. I'm like really
living
like
your best life. You're thriving right
to
now.
I'm so proud of myself.
Oh, congrats.
I didn't
man.
Really sleep though, so I've been trying to get better at that.
Yeah, me either. I went to bed at like 6 a.m. It was trash.
Yeah, that's what my sleep schedule is a shit show. I go to bed at 3 a.m. I wake up at 8. I'm like cranky all morning.
Yeah.
It's like, why don't I just sleep? I should just sleep. And I'm right now, I'm kind of in a
bad
place.
But are you guys having trouble sleeping?
Well, I'm like, reading.
I'm having trouble sleeping.
I'm trying to read these Oprah's goddamn book club books, and they're fucking pissing me off. I don't know why, but I'm not liking the books, and it's making me angry at Oprah because they're all kind of similar. And so I'm like fuming, and then I'm like reading reviews, and I'm like, well, these people fucking love the book. What's wrong with me? I don't know why, but I think I'm becoming like mentally ill in a way. Like, I am not vibing with these books, and I don't know what who. And then I'm trying to figure out, are people paying Oprah to put these books on her list? Like, how does Oprah choose
what's
these
the grift?
Books?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical of those lists. I'm very skeptical. Yeah.
I know. I'm like really starting
I like
to trip.
I don't really think Oprah reads them. I don't really think Oprah reads. Or reads
of course
them.
She
probably
reads.
But like,
she literally has
she,
like glasses glued to her face. Oprah reads.
But I just don't think, I think you should take it with a grain of salt because it's her name. But she has a whole team that like,
yeah, she probably has like a little committee
and, like,
that does all the insert
that's
research.
That's true. It's probably all white people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bunch of Karens.
Yeah, the bunch of Karens are like, Oprah, honey.
Bunch
this,
of Karens.
This is what I think.
Yeah.
I mean, well, that's the thing. It's like, I start to think, like, is it like her, her end of the year like holiday list where it's like clearly people sent Oprah so much free shit and she was just like, I like these fluffy $3,000 slippers. And you're like, what, bitch? This is not relatable.
Yeah.
I'm going to buy
Oprah
this.
Oprah is like the first ever. Oprah is the first ever influencer, but we just don't even know it. Like she's like the one that's like pushing all of her brand deals and we just like accept it for being Oprah because she was,
and I'm like, you're right.
She's a legend and she is. She's
doing,
a legend.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm so skeptical of everything that's recommended to me by a celebrity because they're fucking getting something out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
trust no one.
In conclusion, fuck reading.
Yeah. Fuck reading, you dorks. Play video games and Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you for reading, actually. I need to,
fucking
I need
over
to
it, man.
Get more reading done.
I'm pissed.
Yeah, she's like, I don't want any of this shit.
Yeah, like Jack O'Brien was like, you gotta stop being so vocal about the how much you don't like these Oprah's book club books. It is not a good look. And I was like, I know, but I'm in quarantine, so I have nothing to do but to fume over how I don't like this plot.
Yeah, like, you have to read these trash ass books.
But at least you're reading. I've never heard of someone anger reading. Like, you're like angry reading, which is like better than no reading, I think. But
well, first
I don't know.
I got the where the crawfish what's it called? Sing? I can't remember. So that was like two books ago.
Where the crawfish sing. That's such a book title.
Yeah. So I was like, okay,
really
let's
is.
Get this book. Let's see what's up. And I didn't like it. I was like, okay, whatever. This is basic as fuck. Then I'm like, you know what? No, I'm just being a hater. So I'm gonna get another one. So now I'm also spending like $25 on every fucking book for my goddamn Kindle app because I refuse to order it and touch anything further because of coronavirus. But like now I'm just
right.
Then I got American Dirt, and I'm like, okay, I don't like this fucking book either. Mm-hmm. And now I'm on my third book, and
if
I am
the third
pissed.
One. You don't like it? I mean, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me two more consecutive times for $20 a pop.
It's got
to
be me,
it's
right?
To move on.
It is got to be me. Like, I'm just being a hater?
No, maybe the books are trash.
No.
But they have positive
reviews. I think
reviews.
Most popular things are trash. Yeah, but like, don't trust that. I don't know.
Yeah, trust
maybe,
your gut.
I don't know.
I just don't like the... I think I just don't like these sorts of books. That's what I'm starting to realize.
Right.
Like, I'm just not a fan.
Are you a 60-year-old...
It sounds like they're very...
Woman.
Yeah.
That works at
like,
home.
It sounds like each of these books
I'm turning
like,
into one.
they have these like very lofty ideals and like lofty messages is what it sounds like, and like that's kind of like annoying and repetitive sometimes, and I don't know,
I am getting that like, they are kind of like that, like they're very like, wow, life, wow, oh my god, interesting.
Eat, pray, love.
Ooh,
yeah,
and then I'm
Italy.
Like
yeah,
I'm like cool
problems.
So this book follows a journey of a woman and her son. Okay. There's a murder. Yeah. What?
Well,
how does that make sense?
Intrigue.
That's what it is. A lot of them are like,
okay,
and
well,
then
fuck
there's
reading.
Something happened. Oh my God. You know what? I'm just being a hater. I need to like chill out.
Well, okay. Listeners, if our listeners are reading anything or recommend anything, please recommend it to us. Like, tweet at us, or come on the Instagram post for this episode. Like, let us know what you're reading, if there's anything good out there, because I need to fucking read more. And I have so many books I need to read that I currently own, but I just haven't sat down and done it. I can't concentrate on shit. I don't know why.
You know what I actually am excited to read, which I think I'm going to read after this? I'm going to read The Water Dancer by Ta-Nehisi Coates. I think that one might be good because I like him in general as a writer. Yeah. But we'll see. Maybe I'll be the first person who hates that book.
You definitely can't say that on Twitter. You get dragged.
I would never. Oh, no, I did like Michelle Obama's Becoming, only because I like Michelle Obama. But like, other than that, it was a biography. I was like, okay, cool. I don't recommend American Marriage.
Oh, is that a...
That's another one I read. It's a book club book. Okay?
Well, I do think there are some books. There are some books that are good, like audio books, because you can hear the writer read it to you out loud. So I think those books are fun. I'm trying to get into audiobooks. I haven't like really gotten vibing yet, but now's the time to try, I suppose.
I got some good recommendations.
Oh, hit me.
Demi Moore book, so good. She reads it. It's just amazing. It's called Inside Out. I loved it because I was like, let's hear some
shit.
Me about and she
it.
Is. Yeah. She's fucking talking some shit. And then another one I just got. It's the Jacqueline Kennedy, The Historic Conversations on Life with John F. Kennedy. Oh, my shit. God. This bitch was the cattiest little bitch. She is talking so much shit. She low-key kind of says Martin Luther King was, like, overrated in a weird way where you're like, girl,
oh, my God.
Like, it is so messy. Like, it is, that's, they just released it. It's apparently been in a vault or whatever. They hid it, basically, because it was like 2 or 3 months after Kennedy's head was blown off in front of her. So she's like clearly dealing with trauma. Like, it's like, honey, you have PTSD. Wow. You had your husband's brain in your hands like a week ago. And she is talking so much shit. And you're like, oh, it's the messiest book I've ever heard in my life. Wow. I love it because it's just like white woman anger. And you're like, okay. Oh, yeah. Okay, crazy lady. Let's hear it. So I recommend that. Caroline Kennedy, their daughter, does a foreword that's like, this is about to get wild. And we were going to cut most of it out, but we were like, what's the fucking point? Who cares? Yeah. Just release it. And I like, I love the truth of it. Where
you really
like,
oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I like that they were so honest about how messy it was about to get. It's like really funny. And it's like 8 hours of interviews of this one writer who just interviewed her for so long. And she is, Jackie is, let's just say she's spilling the tea. Oh, God. Anyway, I recommend it. If you don't want to read Oprah's book club book.
It sounds like you like
just gossip.
Real life.
That's what I should
like, real life women stories. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like smart narratives. I will recommend. I like drama.
Yeah. There is one book I recommend that I've read a long time ago, but I gave it to a friend a couple months ago to read. If anyone's interested in like good sci-fi, like one of the main books that like started sci-fi back in the day is called Roadside Picnic. It was banned in Russia for a while. It's by these two Russian men, and they wrote the sci-fi book. It was interpreted as being very political at the time, and it was banned. And then Andrei Tarkovsky, who is like one of the most influential Russian filmmakers, he made a film called Stalker based off of this book. And the book is pretty different than the movie. I think both are phenomenal. But I would really recommend this book, Roadside Picnic, if you guys are interested in like the sci-fi genre, or like if you guys are fans of Tarkovsky's Stalker and are interested in the seeds that helped him develop that into a story. That book was really interesting just to see the history behind it. And also just I'm always really fascinated by books that are banned because they must have angered someone to the point of being like, like there must have been something worthwhile there that needed to be like not publicized. So that's really fascinating to me. So that's something I recommend. But we're winding down to the end of this lovely conversation. Do you have any recommendations for us, or do you, because we talked to Brody, and I know that you guys have, well, you guys have an anime podcast. Are you watching any anime right now? What are you reading? Tell us what you're doing.
Yeah, so we do a podcast called The Dark Weeb where we talk a bunch of anime bullshit because we're nerds and we love doing it. Right now, I just watched a series called Gundam The Origin, which was pretty good if you're a fan of Mobile Suit Gundam, but mainly, like, it's not like robots fighting and shit. It's just like political drama for like five episodes, which is like refreshing to see. That it's fun seeing like serious topics covered in animation, which is fun every now and then, which I've been watching that. That's been good. As far as other shows, there's a show called Gary Haji on Netflix, which is fantizimo. I'm only five episodes in, but it's like a British Japanese production where basically a Yakuza story in Britain. So it's just great seeing like
actors
just act their ass off. It's shot beautifully. Like, there's some great cinematography, great editing. It's also bizarrely funny in some ways. Like, they really know how to, like, the perfect place to put in jokes, which is great. And it's got a fantastic cast. Like, those are the two shows that I'm watching right now. I highly recommend Gary Haji if you have Netflix. It's a great show.
I will. I'm going to put that on my list.
Yeah, I would love to know what you think. They also really know how to do a cliffhanger at every show. They know how to bring you back. It's so good.
They know how to make you binge.
Yeah, for real.
Hell yeah.
Well, where can our listeners find you? Where can they learn more? Plug anything you want to plug. Here's your chance. You have the floor.
Oh, boy. All right. Across all social media platforms at Yay for Zig, Twitter, Instagram, thatdudezig.com. If you want to go to my website for some reason, I don't know, I guess go. You can see my, I mean, if you got a job for me, I guess you can go there and contact my manager. He'd love that. He gets 10%. Other than that, watch Craig of the Creek. I wrote for this upcoming season. I think they're going to stop dropping episodes. I think they may have already started dropping episodes by the time that this airs. And then She-Hulk, whenever that comes out, who knows? Yeah, that'll be fun. Other than that, that's it. That's all I got.
You guys finished production or writing room on She-Hulk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, luckily nice. We got that out right before Corona hit. Yeah.
That's nice. Okay, well, we'll look out for that.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I remember we talked about this with Brody, but you're building Gundams.
Oh ho ho! My other secret passion. So yeah, the audience can't see, but this has been my thing. Oh,
I'm gonna screenshot this. So hold it up.
Let's screenshot. Hell screenshot.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I've been building. I got back into like building models. My dad, and it goes back to my dad. My dad used to build like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Models and stuff when I was a kid. I was like, oh, that's cool. You get to like make your own toys. So like so when Corona hit, the first thing I did was buy a bunch of these models on and put those back together.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
I
grew up building them with my brother. My brother's a huge Gundam fan. And
oh, no shit.
He's an older man now, but I used to help because I like working with my hands a lot. I just like being crafty. So I would help him build these Gundams. And he's got hundreds at my parents' house in his old room. Like, just covering. Like, to a point where my mom's like, this shit got to go. And he's like, no, this is, you don't understand. This is legendary. No one got this many Gundams. And I'm like, you do need to chill a little. But, like, take them with you, you know. But it's like, it ain't. Ladies aren't dying to fuck around a bunch of Gundams watching you. Apparently,
that's why I put myself with a limit to three because there's no way that any woman would want to come into my room and be like, "This man has how many robot toys?"
Dude, my brother straight up has them. Like, it's when you go into his room at my parents' house, it's unbelievable. And like, the ones that I helped build, like, you know, those were whatever. You know, like, we were young when we were building them, but like the ones he has now, like the most recent ones that he put together himself, are like, it's unbelievable. I'm like, how do you have the time or the energy? I feel like when I was younger, I had more patience.
Are they in glass cases?
Some of them
are. In glass cases?
Some are.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Others are just like, stacked next to each other on shelves.
Send me a picture next time you go.
When I go home, hundreds. It's unbelievable.
Oh, that's wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a passion. You got to do what you love.
Yeah, he fucks with it.
I mean, if you're going to do it, now's the time.
Yeah,
now's the time to really get into Gundams.
Gundamplanet.com. You can find all the Gundams you want. That's where I go.
Oh, fuck yeah.
You got to have like such a steady hand, man.
I know.
The second you're like, that's it.
Yeah.
It's like the surgeon. It's like a version. It's like being a surgeon, but a nerd version of that.
Yeah, because I have like tools and stuff too. It's crazy. Like it's bad. I have like a little tweezers. Mm-hmm. I have like little files and stuff.
I mean, I really like getting really sucked into a puzzle and like even just like a big piece of art. So I can imagine it's like that same kind of like in the zone kind of mentality.
Yeah.
But yeah. But thank you so much for talking to us. Yeah. This has been a very lovely, wonderful conversation.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Anytime. This was long overdue. Thank you so much. I'm going to wrap us out. This is Ethnically and Big on Instagram, Ethnically and AMB on Twitter. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
Hell yeah, I'm at Anna Hosea on Twitter.
And until next time, build a Gundam.
Yeah, build a Gundam. Why not? See if you can do it. Hell yeah. I mean, okay. The first few will be sloppy from what I remember me and my brother doing. Like, we were fucking up. But we were also like 10 and, you know,
it's only up from there.
Yeah, it got a lot better. Oh my god, my hand got so steady. I could literally like... Okay, well that was a bad example of whatever I was just doing, but...
No one can see your hand.
No one knows what I was just doing. I was pretending to place something on something.
Okay guys, talk to you later. Smell you later. Bye!
Bye! Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Puma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.